Be who you are. Don't try to like fit into the mold that someone else says you should be.
Never quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Well, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching. Please go hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we introduce our very special guest, let's kick it off with our Patreon question of the day, which is, would you recommend the last documentary that you watched, and what was it?
The last one that I watched was the one on Johnny Manziel. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even remember what the name was, but...
Would you recommend it?
Yeah.
How about you, Corey?
I watched the one about living to... I love documentaries, so I watched the one about living to 100. Have y'all seen that on Netflix?
Yeah.
It's like the secrets of people who live to 100, and it goes through all the blue zones. And absolutely, I would recommend that for sure. Well, yeah.
We went on vacation.
I would want to watch the Johnny Manziel one, so I was going to try to save that one to watch with him.
Yeah,
but we haven't sat down to do it
will
yet.
Completely change the way you look at that dude. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did a good job of hiding what he was.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of know.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people had speculation just because he was so, like, portrayed that party scene lifestyle. But people that just watched him on football would be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Different side of him for sure.
Yeah.
We went on vacation to one of the blue zones in Sardinia. Yeah. Explain what that is, a blue zone.
Nice. So the blue zones are the places where there's the most concentrated 100-year-olds, uh-huh. like people who live to 100, the most concentrated places. And it's weird. It's like little pockets. It could be, it's like a little island in Japan or a place in Greece and Italy. And then there's one in somewhere in America where I can't remember where in America it was.
It's
Utah?
There, no, it's actually in California. It's Ojai, I believe.
Okay, yeah.
O-J-A-I, Ojai.
And so then they study, and a lot of it, you know, I kind of expected it to be about the food, which there is definitely about the food. But a lot of it really is that community, like family, community.
They like living around each other.
And,
yeah.
What's that?
They like living around each other.
Yeah, just that kind of like being together. And then, of course, staying active. And it's not like actual exercise, but more like gardening, walking, places where there's like hills that people have to walk up and down every day, and they're you know, they're whatever they do, their physical activity is involved rather than like sitting all day, which
oh yeah. In Sardinia it was hills everywhere. The best part about it was that the town would shut down from 2 to 5. Mm-hmm. It's like everyone goes inside, they take a break, and then the town comes alive again at 5 o'clock. Then you kind of go out and start walking around. Everyone was really nice. It was really something to experience that.
Nice. Yeah. That pace of life.
Yeah.
Slow
is smooth, smooth is fast. It's kind of deal there. No one was in a hurry there.
It was one of our favorite vacations we've ever taken. So
really?
Yeah. It was awesome.
It actually put me on vacation. I tried to get up and move. There was times I was sitting out on the back porch and then I was like, oh, I got to get up and do something. But then I'd stand up and there's nowhere to go. Couldn't do anything. So
everything's closed.
Everything's closed. Yeah. So it actually makes you take a vacation.
Forces you to rest. Well, y'all have taken some good vacations, so if you say that was one of the best, I'm going to take that as a good recommendation.
It's high on the list. And it was good. The people are what why we want to go. I mean, don't get me wrong, the scenery and the food, just like you said, but we ran across a bunch of great people.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. I felt like that was kind of the overriding thing that I like learned from it. It's just like you see that laughter and love and familial community aspect from each of the ones that and I've said that about like even like going through COVID within our family, seeing how I think because we kind of like hunkered it down together. And even whenever like Uncle Si got COVID, I truly believe the guys kept him alive because he was very sick and he was in the hospital and he has lung trouble. He's had COPD. He smoked for years. So he was definitely like a candidate to not make it. And through COVID, and he, yeah, he was very sick. He says he didn't want to live. Like, he felt that bad. But the guys all did not, they just were like,
hey, we're not going to let you die. Uncle Si, you're too hard. We love you.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. So just like forced him to sit up, forced him to take his medicine.
Yeah. That's good too, because if he'd have died, I'd have came down there and whipped his ass. I couldn't let him die.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? We need that fool around.
That's right. That's right. And now he has this like new lease on life. But I think it was just like that people, you know, people can keep you going. And I had my grandmother and who's 92 and great uncle who had COVID and were sick. But it was like we you know, we were able to, because we do live so close in such close proximity, to surround each other and like help and feed and get the medicine and do all those things that you needed to do. And, you know, it helps you live longer if you got people around you.
We started traveling. It's almost you go places to get away from where you come from, and then you go to see the scenery. But now it's ultimately, hey man, we're gonna meet somebody. There's somebody in there that you need to meet. They got a personality, something. There's some people out there that can make you laugh no matter what they say, even if they're not trying to be funny. And I hunt for them now. I look for them, kind of know what I'm looking at, and it's that's the best part about traveling now.
That's good. I love that. That's so true.
Uncle Si, man.
Well, Willie, I will say Willie is one of those people that can make you laugh. So I appreciate that. I think he's going to keep me young.
Yeah.
I love traveling around with him just to watch the heat he takes. I mean, when I became his photographer was the best part of my life, man. I swear. Anytime we go anywhere together, I'm like, yeah, that's him. All right. Get him.
That's hilarious. That's great.
What documentary?
Recently, I've been really into all the alien documentaries. I don't know if you saw the new little biologic that came out of Mexico.
Male and female, right?
One was pregnant, apparently, word on the street.
Yeah.
No, I can hear that.
It's like a 1,000-year-old mummified alien body that they uncovered in a tomb, and they just released it through Mexican Congress. And
it's actually gaining traction. Like, there's something to it.
It's not confirmed if it's real or not real, but it's out there.
That's pretty heavy if the leadership's doing something like that, for sure.
Yeah. That's crazy. The fact that they had that whole congressional
inquiry.
Yes, that was insane. That we've definitely had lots of conversations about that around the dinner table since then, because it's like, whoa.
It's a good one, right?
I know.
Kind of takes your mind off everything else.
Yeah.
What do you think about stuff like that?
I saw a picture on Instagram where they had the little alien body and they cut into it and it was butter cream cake. I thought that was so funny. Okay, so let's get into...
Yeah, hold on. Oh. I saw a documentary. Have you seen the one on Arnold? The new one he did on athlete, actor, and I think politician? I thought it was great.
Yes.
I thought it was great.
Two episodes of that and thought it was fantastic too.
They did a fantastic job. I mean, you want to talk about the American dream?
Yeah.
And no other reason to love that man than he lived it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many reasons to love that man, but if you can't look at him any other than that, coming over here, and he talks about vision a lot. I think it's very important. You will never be able to become anything or go towards anything unless you know what you're going for. And he's real adamant about that. And he's also funny, too. He's like, because my favorite line is when he's talking about, you don't think I look in the mirror and be like, Arnold, what the shit, man? You know, because it's getting old. You can't keep that physique. And I you never think about that. The guy was larger than life to me.
Yeah.
He pushed me out. All his movies, I tried to be every movie he made.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of had that impact on me. And I just thought that the way he, in his life, the ups and downs and everything that he's been through, man, and he's still here. That's an American thing. Like, Americans get their asses kicked. They mess up. I mean, we're all sinners. We know that. And it's just, you know, you just keep going.
Yeah.
And
good. I love that. Yeah. I'm going to go back and finish it. I did enjoy it. And our kids, it's been funny because I don't know if they watched it or what, but they were like, we didn't realize how many movies he was in, how big of a star he was, you know, because that was back kind of in our day. But they were like, yeah, he's huge. You know, he's a huge star. And I love that too. He really, he believed, I mean, he just did not give up.
Believes. power. Yeah. I mean, you put that vision in his mind. He can't. And he's like, anytime I try to do anything, I got to visualize it in my head. Then you can't stop him.
Yep.
Because if you can see the picture and somebody else can't, they don't even know what you're going for. So they can't interfere. I mean, they can try, but it's not going to work. I mean, that's the one thing I took from that man was my vision.
That's good.
All right.
That's really good.
So today we have a very special guest, Corey Robertson. He's a New York Times bestselling author and star of A&E's Duck Dynasty. She works in the family business with Duck Commander and also is a co-owner of Tread Lively Productions. Corey's a passionate speaker, a writer, and she's passionate about motherhood, adoption, empowering families around the world. Welcome to the show, Corey. Glad to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What does that do?
Yeah,
girl, we've been together for a while now. I mean, we've been together since before all this started.
Yeah.
How about that? I was thinking about that the other day when we were sitting at that round table out there at the SHOT Show. Just kind of everything was everything. And just to hear what they just read about you. Yeah, I know, right? All those accolades that you have now, New York Times bestselling author. I mean, all the TV shows, everything that you've done, all the people that you helped, man, that's something.
Thank you.
Welcome. You're welcome. It's been amazing to watch your family grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, yep, you've been in it the whole time. That's so crazy. I think, it was before any of that. I read your book. That's how it all started. I don't know if you remember that, but I read your book and I was like, I was talking about it at a dinner table with some friends. And Willie had just started Buck Commander. It was all kind of, we were just,
remember that?
Duck Commander was growing.
He just got that tattoo on his forearm. I was sitting at that table. I was like, you know, that don't come off, right? And he's like, hey, yeah. And he's like, we're going somewhere. I'm like, Roger,
we're
that.
In.
Hey, we're
That's
good.
Right. Yeah. Buck Commander, we were going all in. That's for sure. He got the tattoo.
We're all in if you get paint. You know what I'm talking about?
That's hilarious. Right? That's so funny.
When was that? How long have y'all known each other?
Was it 08?
Probably so, because we started Buck Commander in 2006.
Yeah, it was 08.
So, I mean, early.
Yeah, early. A lot of people don't know that Willie and Corey were actually at our wedding. They were there to help us celebrate our wedding.
Remember how cold it was?
It was cold, but that tent was nice and warm. Once we got in the tent, it was perfect.
All I remember from that night is I broke out in hives. That's all I remember, man.
Did you really?
Oh, man, it was bad. I don't think I've ever told anybody that. Right before we got married, I was so nervous, I broke out in hives. Never happened to me.
Oh, my goodness.
That's why I was standing in the corner and couldn't move.
That is awesome. Well, I remember whenever he first met you, Melanie. I remember him telling us about you.
Yeah.
And just falling in love and all of that. So
yeah, because they were like, wait a second, now you don't rush anything, because I mean, it was we were on that wild roller coaster, and I was running around pounding around with y'all by myself. It was pretty fun. And then I told them, I was like, I met the one, and they were like, all right, we'll have to meet her, you know. And I was like, all right, cool, man. Let's do this.
13 years later, here we are.
That's awesome. Love it.
Well, so we know that you have this big movie coming out next week, but if you want to give our listeners just a little bit of a background on, you know, how you met Willie, kind of like y'all's start of your relationship, meeting Phil and Kay and all of that, and kind of like a true backstory of the movie, kind of filling us in on that.
Yeah. So I came into the family. I actually met Willie in fourth grade at summer camp. And so, which is crazy to think about, like having kids and grandkids that like they might meet their spouse in fourth grade. Like, that's insane. But I remember I thought he was cute. I like saw him across the cafeteria. I thought he was so cute. He had dimples. He did not have a beard yet.
He didn't have a beard?
No beard yet. Oh,
long hair?
No.
No tattoos. Do you have any tattoos in fourth grade?
Maybe a mullet. Yeah.
The start of it. Yeah.
He was so cute, and he asked me on the moonlight hike, and I said yes and everything. But we didn't go to the same church. He went to like the little country church, and I went to the city church, which, I mean, we're in West Monroe, Louisiana, so
big city,
not that
right?
City. Yeah. But, you know, But compared to his, it was like tiny, tiny church. And so I went down to their house, though, in fifth grade. I'll never forget. This was the first time I went to Phil and Kay's house, which is the same house you see on Duck Dynasty. Like, they haven't moved. Nothing's changed pretty much, except for they did add a room on I went there. Growing up, they had two bedrooms. You know, Phil and Kay were in one, and the boys were in another, all shared one together. Willie says he looks back and thinks, like, where did I sleep? Because they really had one, like, double bed for four boys. And he's like, we just slept wherever we found a spot.
Made it work.
Yeah, we slept wherever we found a spot. And he admits that he peed the bed, so no one wanted to sleep with him. So he
bedwetter. That's out now. We put that on national whatever this is.
Yeah, we'll just go ahead and say it. So anyway, fifth grade, I went down there, and Phil, I'll never forget meeting Phil. He had this like big black beard. No, it's gray, but it was black, and it was intimidating, you know. And he said, have you met my boys, Willie Jess and Jason Silas? And my friend and I were there together, and we were like so intimidated. We're like, yes, sir. And he says, they're going to be good husbands someday. But we're in fifth grade, and he's like pitching us.
Recruiting you already, yeah, through the pitching exactly, while you're
yeah.
in fifth grade.
I guess, yeah, he's already pitching it. And he said, they're good hunters, they're good fishermen, they're going to be good providers. And I'll never forget him saying that. And I
What were you thinking? That sounds like a great plan.
It turned out, he was right, you know. At that time, I was actually thinking, I just thought he was cute. But I really wasn't thinking about all the other stuff. But yeah, so that happened then. And then my senior year, we started dating seriously. And it was, I mean, we started dating in January. And by March, we were saying we were getting married. We just knew. We had known each other for so long and been friends and all that stuff off and on. So that's how it started. And then I guess, of course, had kids and grew a family and all that. And then whenever Willie was about 30 was whenever he decided to go back to work for Duck Commander. He had was running a summer camp. We were children's ministers, youth ministers, kind of doing different church work and also running Camp Chioka, which is still in our family and is still really a big part of our family life. John Luke actually is the director out there now. But about 30, he was like, you know, I think it's time for me to go back to the family business. And he was, I say his 20s were his rebellious years, you know, because he was like, you know, showering and shaving and not living up to the family, like
not standards of the family,
like,
yeah.
The big beard and wear camo all the time and live in the woods, basically, you know. That was his college years and all that.
Well, Corey, and speaking of college, I find it interesting, and I would have never known it if I haven't traveled with y'all. But when y'all were in college, y'all actually did a year abroad.
We did. We studied in Florence, Italy, which we're going back this next summer. We're so excited because we haven't been in a long time. We did a semester in Florence and loved it. It was the most fun. Willie, by the end of it, was like, I've had enough culture, though.
But they got that. I mean, Italy's laced with culture.
Yeah,
it is. It is. We went to all the museums. We did all of it, and we had the best time. We say we were... Neither of us are great with directions, so we were like lost in Europe. We would just get on a train. It was, you know, those young years of life where you're
supposed to do that.
Really have no money, and you sleep on the train because you can't afford a hotel room. And we'd get on a train and spend the night sleep and wake up in a new country, and it was just the best.
I think you see more when you don't have money.
Mm-hmm. It's so true.
You know what I mean? Because once we have money, it's like, hey, there's a nice hotel. We're going to stay in there. If it's raining, we're not going to go out. We're going to kind of look around here. But when you don't have nothing.
Yeah.
In your early 20s and 18s, 20s, up until the 30s, maybe, you're supposed to, there's nothing wrong with that. You will see
it
everything and experience
it.
Sure, man. Yeah.
I love that.
It was so fun. One time, I remember we were going like south of France. We were going from Florence to Spain and going through the south of France. And there was these like robbers on the train. I'll never forget. So we're asleep in one of those little train cars and we're all sleeping and I have some friends are with us. And they open our car thing and grab a bag, like one of our friend's backpacks, and take off with it. Willie jumps up and takes off running through the train. I'm like, this is like a movie. He's like,
so hold on, wait a second. Y'all actually got to be in a real-life train robbery? I don't have that qual, man. That's really cool. I didn't know that he did that.
And Willie stepped up. He chased him down. He starts chasing him, and I'm thinking, what is about to happen? He goes through, like, one car, you know, and they dropped the backpack, thankfully. So he got it back. But I'm just envisioning, like, once he went to the next car, I'm like, oh no, he's never coming back. Anyway, he came back. We were all safe. He saved the backpack. The whole night, he slept with his, like, feet on the thing. So every time, you know, the door would start to open, he'd wake up. Anyway, so yeah, that was pretty heroic, huh?
Marcus, I feel like I would have chased somebody. I don't run. I definitely won't run after somebody unless probably we were on a train, because I knew that the end is right there. So, but yeah, that's a good one.
Love that.
I didn't know that story. That's nice.
What a fun story.
Yeah. So that happened. And yeah, that was super fun. Yeah. So after college, we came back here, moved back here, started having babies. Super fun years, sweet years of him running the camp. So we lived on the camp property. So our kids were just like, had this free range life where, you know, they ran around and had maps of the property, of the camp property, and got to just run free down there. And then, when he was about 30, he said, okay, I think it's time to go back to the family business. So he did. And really the first year, he was like the yard guy down there, because he didn't really have a specific role at Duck Commander. He just kind of, it's like, I'm going to come back in and just see what there is here. And we kind of had, that was when we were starting. My dad had started the website, duckcommander.com, and was handling that for Phil and Kay. And we said, you know, I think there's something to this, the internet, the website, you know, where people are going to start buying from here and everything. This was kind of really early days of all that. And so, yeah, he went down the first year. He just kind of was like finding out what was happening down there. He started traveling with Phil a little bit. Phil was doing some speaking, and he would sell the duck calls, set up a little booth. And it was those days where we were like, you know, this isn't done. Duck Commander has more to it. And we just started getting the inspiration about what Duck Commander could be. And Phil and Kay had done a fantastic job with it, but they were kind of at the point of like, yeah, we did all we can do. We've sold, there's only, you know, a million duck hunters in the world. We've sold is all we can sell. And I feel like Willie and I just came in with some fresh life and excitement for the family company and the brand and what Phil and Kay had started. And so, we started running the website out of our house at that point. And we were the ones who answered the call at 2 a.m. when someone called in for a duck call or whatever. Because, you know, saw the number on the website. We were the ones who packaged.
That's when you would buy a duck call back then.
Yeah.
2 a.m. You know what I mean? You see those infomercials? I got every one of those fishing lures and every duck call.
And they'd call our house and we'd be like, yep, Duck Commander, whatever, you know. So, yeah, those were those fun early days of us trying to just kind of figure it out. And we started this group called Duckaholics Anonymous. And so if you were a duckaholic, you were like addicted to duck hunting. And we had like, you know, the 10 rules of Duckaholics Anonymous. And I wrote the newsletter for it, and just all these fun early days where I'd call Phil and be like, all right, how many ducks did you kill today? So I could put it in the newsletter, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
That's awesome. So,
those were early days.
I remember the first commercials. When he had the beard, because you were talking about the beard, and it's intimidating.
Yeah.
Like a lot of guys will grow that out just for that reason, and it works. I mean, and I remember watching the, I think it was a Benelli commercial, and they were like, boom, 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 and they were paddling, they were all cammied up, and it was raining, and they were blasting ducks, and they were paddling the boat with the shotgun. That was one of the coolest damn commercials I had ever seen, and I was a full-blown Navy SEAL. I was like, right there, dude's hardcore right there. Yeah, man. I mean, when they're all painted up and looking the part,
that's
some sexy stuff, man. That commercial right there was, I'll go buy another shotgun, even though I have a lot.
Yeah. Now, just talking about it, it's making you want to buy
it. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, it's not even duck season right now. I'm about to go out after this and get my shotgun out in the duck call and just start practicing.
My grandpa that just passed away this last year, he was such a fan of Duck Commander. Like, he had the DVD sets of Duck Commander. He was probably part of your Duckaholics thing if you had it in mail, because he didn't do internet. But
they love doing that, man.
I mean, my grandpa was one of y'all's biggest fans ever.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
I come from a duck hunting family, that's for sure.
I didn't. I married into it, so I didn't know what I was missing. You can't believe how much fun you have on a duck hunt when you're out there with your boys and your dog, kind of doing all that.
That is so funny. And it's okay. So y'all took
duck. Oh, go ahead.
So y'all took Duck Commander to a whole nother level after that.
Yeah, I feel like that was just kind of that, yeah, that new energy that Willie brought in. And it was funny because you talk about the beard. So back then, Phil, I mean, he's always had the beard. Like, I've never seen him without it.
Ever? Has he ever shaved that? Never, right?
Like, never. Yeah, I mean, he's always born with it.
Came out wearing that sucker.
He did. I think he was, yeah. Now, there are some cute, there's some pictures. He's cutie, too, in high school. There's all his high school sports pictures, for sure. But yeah, I remember Willie. So Willie and Jace, they used to, like, grow the beard out for hunting season, and then they'd shave after that. So it'd kind of be like, you know, that was the hunting season thing that they'd do.
See, I have to do that. That's what Mel puts on me.
You do that, too?
October 31st, and I have to shave Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. That's how the guys, that's how Willie and Jace used to do. But also, it's funny because they would then, Willie would, you know, go to Walmart meetings or do this kind of stuff, and they would shave before they'd do that. Then one year, he was like, why don't we just, like, go as who we are? You know, like, why are we trying to, like, clean up and wear a suit for the business meetings like, you know, like everybody else does? Let's just keep the beards and do what we do. And that's, I think, really when it all kind of started shifting.
Oh,
and
identity. Yeah, I got the identity.
Lesson of, like, hey, be who you are. Don't try to, like, you know, fit into the mold that someone else says you should be. We like to wear camo and wear beards and be in the woods. And
that's, I'm trying to remember when that... when it really caught fire was when the show came out.
Duck Dynasty.
The Dynasty, right? Mm-hmm. When y'all became the Dynasty. Because y'all family, it is, man. It is. All over the world. I mean, I sent, texted Willie. I found, I was in the middle of nowhere. And found a newspaper with y'all's picture. And wasn't even in English. And I was like, man, they got you guys everywhere.
That's crazy.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah. I think it was in over like 100 countries at one point. So... that was crazy. We would never, I mean, who could ever imagine or expect it?
That whirlwind like that, and try to explain that to people, like you see, especially with y'all and your family, the whole family, it's not just one person. Because usually, like, you'll have the celebrity and then the family will come in there just to kind of, but y'all, it's all y'all.
Yeah. Which I actually think that really helps us. People were like, how'd you kind of keep your head and all
that's
that?
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah,
and I think that really helped us because I do look at people, you know, I remember, especially during that time period, seeing an interview with some young kind of star, and I just felt her, like, loneliness, you know, and I thought, oh, how lonely would this be if it's, you're on your own, and you experience that.
I've seen it. Oh, that's why I bring it up. I've seen that.
Yeah, you've been there. Yeah, you definitely, kind of like, when you're on your own going through something like this, because it can be, there's a loneliness that comes with it, which you wouldn't expect because you're like, oh, everybody's looking at you and everybody loves you and all this, but actually, like,
it's the loneliest.
There's an isolation and everything. So thankfully we did have the family that we went through it together. We were all in it together. So we could kind of, like, understand it for each other and be there for one another in it.
Everybody take to it pretty well.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody really did.
Because on the outside, it seems like it. Pardon the metaphor, but like duck on a pond, like you guys look as smooth as can be. It's like that duck, but underwater, them legs are going 900 miles an hour, right?
I was going to say, I don't know about it. It wasn't all smooth, that's for sure. We definitely did not do it perfectly. And definitely there were some things that would, I mean, when Duck Dynasty ended, we were all like, all right, let's take some inventory here. Like, what just happened? Where are we? We had to really focus back on our marriage. And, like, we're like, all right, we need some counseling. We need to like, really kind of seriously assess what just happened. Because it was a crazy whirlwind. And there were definitely hard things that happened from it. Our kids, you know, look back, which it's interesting because we've talked about, would we do it again? And all of our kids are like, yes, absolutely. So I'm like, okay, that's good. You know, at least no one's like, you know, I wish we'd have never done it. Everyone, even whatever the hardships that came with it or whatever, the blessings were way bigger than whatever the negatives were. And so, and you know, you grow from hardships. That's the thing. You're not guaranteed an easy life if you work at a bank or a teacher or whatever. You know,
there ain't nothing easy about this place down here.
That's right.
I love that.
Yeah.
I remember watching Sadie take off.
Yeah.
I mean, it's different when y'all are celebrity and you got that protection down there, but when they get their own fan base, like when your kids become popular, then they're not, it's a completely different thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she talks about that a lot. I mean, Dance with the Stars definitely.
How about that?
Put her in a different category. It made it was different, you know? And so before she had that protection of the family, then that happened. And she experienced a lot, you know, some of that loneliness of kind of like, it appears that like you've got every friend in the world, but actually your real friends don't really know how to be friend to you anymore and kind of start
rejecting terrible?
You or the jealousy or any, you know, those type of things are just not really understanding kind of what your life is and looks like. And so that was hard. There'd be people in the stands with duck calls and beards and yelling things when she tried to make a shot and, you know, and weird fans running across the field at a football game that, you know, and stalker, you know, all those things.
Package deal comes with everything. You know, they don't talk about that.
Had to grow up. That's right. Yep. Yep.
That part gets left out. And every celebrity has to go through it.
That's right.
And no celebrity talks about it. Not really, unless it makes the news.
It's hard because you don't want to complain because you're like, hey, you know, I'm grateful. I'm living a good life. You know, you don't want to complain. It's not like I always said people be like, oh, it's so hard. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I didn't like move to Haiti to become a missionary. Like, it's not hard like that hard, you know? So you feel like,
sure,
it's a different kind of hard.
Different kind of hard altogether.
You don't want to complain, but it's hard. There's
I'm glad you said it like that. I go through that all the time. I was like, people are like, hey, man, you must not have a hard day. I was like, I don't have a hard day. I've been through my hard days.
Right.
Physically bleed and all that stuff. Like, I know what that is.
Yeah.
But there's a different kind of pain that comes along with this life. There's a different kind of difficulty that you can't anticipate. Most people don't talk about it because it's different for every person.
Yeah.
And once I noticed that and started picking that up, and it's been years now, but, you know, I can see it. You can also see the people who are coming into the life, like, hey, this might chew you up. You know what I mean? So the family dynamic is so important with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that really helped us.
I had my teammates. That was my blessing. I had my family, but I had my teammates. I mean, them suckers they don't even bat an eye at me. I didn't have a chance to complain.
Yeah, that's good. And also, I think, you know, staying close to your roots in Texas. That's how staying here in Louisiana, having that.
I went right back home. Sure.
Yeah. Going back to where your roots are deep rather than kind of just, you know.
You know, the best part about that, and you guys do it perfectly, is that when you go back home to your family and your friends where you grew up, they don't see that celebrity.
Right.
They're like, hey, I know you. I know who you are.
Yeah.
And I need that. I love hearing that. I mean, I'll be some places sometime and I'm looking over at someone like, man, in my head, I'm going, I can't believe you're talking to me like that. You know what I mean? But then I remember back when they're older than me. I'm a boy still in their eyes. And like, you can talk to me any way you want. Yeah. I probably need to hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
So with all of the success of Duck Dynasty and seeing your kids do all kinds of awesome things, Sadie with her whole, she has like a whole conglomerate going on, and Bella had her book come out, and I mean, all of them have their own successes. And now you've got this movie that didn't Willie produce it?
So actually, like, on the title, Willie's executive producer, and I'm one of the producers because I was really just in the day-to-day of it. Willie was kind of more in the you know, Willie's out. We were just talking about this recently. Willie, he is kind of that dreamer over, and I'm kind of the one who, like, you know, does the steps to get it, make it happen.
Interprets the dreams.
Yeah.
You got to have some person who dreams it. Then you got to have the interpreter who knows what he's looking at. And then you got to have the person who can line it out.
There you go. There you go. So we're actually partnered with one of Willie's cousins, Zach Dasher, who, when you see the film, Phil's sister, who is Aunt Jan, who's in the movie, that is a really instrumental part of the film and the story of Phil and Kay's life. She's the sister that never gave up on Phil. When Phil was at his lowest, he was, you know, a drunk, and just, you could look at him and think his life is going nowhere. Jan believed in him. You know, she's the one who sent the pastor to the bar. She's the one who said, if you convert Phil, he will convert thousands. She just knew that Phil had that in him, even when his life looked like it was just a disaster. So anyway, Zach is our partner. Her son, Zach, is our partner in Trev Lively. And so the film was really, you know, a part, his vision as well to make this happen, because it was his mom's story as well. And so it's been a crazy process, about 2 years from like writing it and funding it. And we filmed it right here in Shreveport, which is about an hour and a half from here, right close to where Phil and Kay grew up. We filmed a lot of it in Vivian and Dixie, all the little towns that they grew up in. Filmed some of it here in Monroe. And so, yeah, it's been a crazy process. It was hard. It was hard work.
Yeah.
We hit a point where the first edit, I was like, oh, no. We screwed this up. Like, we lost it, you know. No. I watched it and was like, oh, my goodness. Because the story is a hard story. I mean, we're covering the 10 years of Phil and Kay's marriage that was, like, bad. Mm-hmm. And we're like, how are we going to not make this rated R? Like, because that was Phil's life at that time period, you know. But we were like, we want to show the real, the raw, the gritty. We don't want to, like, gloss over because, you know, a lot of Christian films do that. It's like, oh, you end up with something kind of cheesy because you're
you missed the hard part.
You're glossing over the hard part. Yeah. So we're like, we don't want to gloss over that. But also, like, it's like the first, you're like, oh, we don't want to sit with 3 hours of seeing Phil drunk. You know, so like, how do we tell this story? And yeah, so the first edit, we're like, oh, shoot, we might not have captured it. But miraculous, I say miraculously, really, because I think it was miraculous. We sat in a room and just were like, all right, how do we actually tell the story? What are the pieces that really need to be told to kind of, you understand somebody? Like, you know, you see somebody as a drunk and you're like, oh, okay, you know, they make bad choices, but also there's things that led up to that point. You know, there's the things, what parts of the life led to this? What was his motivation? Why did he choose that? What all happened in the sad period? So anyway,
yeah, it's almost like all those situations you keep apart from it. Like, you take something, like, drinking wasn't bad when you were in that part, but you went to this part and you kept your drinking.
Right.
That's what you were saying. It's like steps. It's like nobody gets into this like in a whole one moment. That's not how it works.
That's so true. That's good. That is so true.
You know what I mean? It's just like, how did I get here? It's like, what is that slow process?
Exactly. And then you wake up one day and
you're in it. Yeah, you're in it.
You're in it. And then you hit rock. If you hit rock bottom, then you figure out, okay, now I can look up and like figure out how to get myself out of this. And
a lot of people, when they talk about, I'm sorry, but when Christians, man, they think our lives are great all the time. And I was like, no. Hey. To get to this point, we'd had to suffer. Matter of fact, some of these Christians that you see all the time that have these great lives are still suffering. They suffer in it. But they understand that part goes with this part. That's how God works.
Exactly.
Like, and it's overlooked a lot. Like,
that's the thing. Like, we gloss over this as Christians, but you look at the Bible, they didn't gloss over. Like, these people that God chose to his work and work through had tough lives, made bad decisions, murderers, adulterers, you know, all of these things, drunks, you know, all of these problems. So it's like, God doesn't just choose people who are perfect. He really rarely chooses someone who's perfect to do his work. He chooses the one who's weak. And then his glory is made known in that. So that was, you know, a huge part of the message of the film. So yeah, we went back and we did 3 days of reshoots and it just turned the whole thing around. You know, it was like, after the 3 days of reshoots, we've cut those into the movie and we're like, this is it. We have it, you know, and just are really proud of it. It turned out great. I cannot wait for y'all to see it. I'm excited. Aww. I can't wait to hear your feedback about it. It's hard. It's hard to watch. I mean, because it is a hard time period of their life. But the redemption, it's like that scripture about like who is forgiven much forgives much, you know, the greater understand that you're rescued, that you've been rescued from the pit, you know, the more you would.
Those people hit the hardest. Those people will always hit you the hardest. The ones that have been screwing up their whole life and people have been forgiving them. And it only takes a second. And you don't have to discipline or scold them or anything. You can see it in their eyes. When someone turns the page and turns around and realizes that they've been screwing up the whole time and all they wanted, they'll give and they'll go harder than anybody.
Yep.
I'm a living example of that.
Yeah. And that's Phil's life. That's exactly what you see in his life. He hit that bottom and there's a line in the movie that says, I had to get to the end of myself to find the beginning of God. And it's so true. It's like, that's where we all need to be. You know, some of us are more aware of it than others, you know? And I think the more aware of it you are, the more you can offer grace to others, the more you can love others, the more you can live that abundant life God actually has for us.
So I loved watching movies and I didn't know anything about making them.
Yeah.
I didn't know half of what. Yeah. Like, if you went in, if you sit down and watch a movie and enjoy it, you got no idea who actually did that. I mean, the actors are one thing, but the people putting that sucker together that don't get any credit for anything.
Yes,
they're amazing. What was one of the things that you were like?
You on set a lot for yours?
Every day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
That's how I was pretty much, and Zach was every day our partner, and I was you know, most days. Because, yeah, you're like, you're telling your story. You have to do it right. You know, you can't just let someone else do that. So
what did Phil and Kay say when they saw it the first time?
It was hard. Phil, yeah, I've never seen Phil cry like he has over this time period. It's been hard. One of the things he said that really struck me was, I think Phil has told his story forever. Mm-hmm. And he was up for doing it because he was like, hey, if it'll help somebody, tell my story. You know, he's told a story, but it's one thing to tell it and another thing to see yourself on a big screen and living like that, you know? And so I think it has been harder for him than we all kind of expected, or he expected. So we asked him, like, what do you think of the actor that played you, who did a fantastic job? But Phil said, his line was, not much. And we were like, oh, Phil, what do you mean? And he was like, I didn't like that guy on the screen. Like he didn't like himself. He didn't like seeing himself.
Yeah. He didn't like himself. Like yeah.
He didn't like seeing himself in that when he was like that.
I hope the actor knows that it's not his acting.
We clarified it. We went ahead.
Yeah. That's actually a compliment to the actor.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We were like, hey, explain what you mean here, you know, because we were like, what do you, and he was like, I didn't like that guy on the screen that I saw us because he saw himself. He saw himself in that so much in it, and he knew, like, oh, I think he kind of realized, I don't know, it just, he had to come to grips with some of that. But it was so beautiful because Kay, I've said all along, Kay, when she forgave Phil, she truly forgave him. You know, she's not holding on to any of it. She's not, you know, she just really was able to offer that grace and forgave him. And so through all this, she's been so sweet. And I think they've had some sweet moments and able to, like, you know, heal even from some things that I think maybe Kay healed from and had forgiven him of and all that he's now having to forgive himself, maybe even.
That's so sweet.
Oh, well, you know what that does to him?
Yeah.
Does to us? Mm-hmm. Is it takes that we swallow that pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once you realize that you've been hurting somebody, mm-hmm. And, I mean, you realize it.
Yeah.
Then that pain immediately comes inside of you. Mm-hmm. And it's the hardest thing to deal with. It's like a center line of pain. It's unexplainable. Yeah. And that in itself will humble you.
Yeah.
When you see everyone else's grace been thrown at you for so long and you never acknowledged it, and then finally it opens up and you're like, oh, wait a second. Then he can look back and see that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what he's experience through this movie.
See yourself. I'll never forget. I mean, I didn't watch it all the way through, but watching myself get my ass kicked along with all my buddies, man, I didn't know what to do. How about that? I knew what to do, you know, in the moments, but never. It's kind of like you look back and, man, I was like, I know I kind of have an idea of what he's feeling, man, and you can't even talk about it. You can't even explain it sometimes. It's tough because of the men we are now. Like, I would have never. You kind of want to apologize. You know what I mean? Kind of want to say to our families, and I'm like, I'm sorry I had to be like that.
Yeah. That, and then, Willie said this, because our church that we go to has this saying that says, where you have no past, only a future. And Willie's like, except for that, unless they make a movie about you.
Yeah,
and
then how about that? Watch
or you write a book, they make a movie.
Well, I can't get past it.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, I can't.
Yeah, that's hard. That's another level. Like, when you're in the spotlight and you're telling your story and you know it's for the good. I mean, the what good your book has done and what good Phil and Kay's story is doing for others, but you're having to live it. You're having to live through it.
Oh, girl. So you want to hear something funny that happens to me? Every time I walk in somewhere, everyone's always going to give me their best, and they're always going to try to outdo me or show me how badass they are. Like, Mel and I have to take a Pilates class. Like, we go to Pilates together all week. Uh-huh. And nice. I literally go in there and get my ass handed to me. I don't know anything what I'm doing, man, but they make it, it's just as hard as can be in multiple situations. And it's got one of them deals like, hey, I know a little about you. I know you can handle it. I'm like, no, that's not. Just because I can doesn't mean I like handling it all the time.
Yep.
But it doesn't matter. Once you get stamped, that's right. Yep. Once he got that duck stamp, it's on him forever.
That's right. It's so true.
He's the one that had to go through the hard stuff to come out on the other side so we can see that that's possible. Because we're all born into the mess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's one thing. Actually, whenever Duck Dynasty happened, this is just on a light note, but you see it in exactly what you're saying. We kind of learned how people don't like people to change. If you're in the spotlight, you're in the public eye, they like you to stay the same. They want you to be, that's what, and I started thinking about it. Like you think of these like old rockers who are like still rocking the same look.
That's
you know?
A perfect example of that, yeah.
Because people want you to be who they think you are on the screen, and they want you to stay where real people change and grow. And,
every day.
Yeah. But it's hard because you get trapped in this kind of like one. And even when Willie like cut his hair, it was weird because it's like, wait, no. We want you to be that guy from that time period. And if you cut your hair, that means you're not that guy anymore. Like, no, that you're still the same person. It's just you grow and change. And
how about that anomaly? Because we fall in love with it.
Yeah.
We fall in love with him. I'm the same way, athlete. Willie, I see it. When he cut his hair, I was like, dude, what is that? What happened?
Exactly.
What's the matter? Why'd you cut your hair? You know what I mean? Like, that's any of my business why if he cuts his hair or not. I don't give a damn. But I mean, when I saw it, I was like, well, where's Willie? What happened, man? You okay?
Exactly. Yes. But on a deeper level, like what you're saying, like people are expecting you to be that Navy SEAL. Like, I got to be, everything's always got to be tough and the hardest and push it to the limit because that's who you are, you know, but it's like, oh, I'm growing.
See, that's the thing is I've made my transition. Like I'm in the church. Like I try to be nice and do all this stuff. And it doesn't resonate. People are like, what's the matter with you? What happened? I'm like, I you're supposed to grow. You know, you go from the warrior to the poet. It's part of that, but doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
So what do you think like with people watching the movie, is the biggest message in their redemption? Is that kind of the overall theme for it?
Yes. I would say redemption and really that, the message that there's nobody that's too far gone from the love of Jesus. Like I think people count themselves out because they're like, oh, I've screwed up. I've hit this. I've done this. I've done that. And they count themselves out. But like, Jesus is like, no, I'm here. I died for everybody. I'm here for all of us. And so I think that, I think a lot of people, I think that hope of like, hey, there can be something different in your life. You can come out of this and there can be, there's a point where, you know, I think there's a point that everybody hits in different parts of their life where something might feel hopeless, like, oh, this person will never change. You know, that saying of like, oh, people don't change or whatever. This person will never change or my marriage can never be better or whatever. And this Phil and Kay's life proves that that's actually not true. You know, Phil changed his life at 28. And then, you know, 30, Duck Call business started. But it wasn't until Phil was like 60 that Duck Dynasty happened, you know, or whatever. It's like, oh, things can change and there is always hope for something different. But there was a time when Kay was a single mom of three boys that she didn't know she'd ever see Phil again. But Jesus came into Phil hit rock and was like, oh, I don't want this. I want something different. I want something better for my life. And things change. So I think it's a message of hope, redemption, forgiveness, Kay having to forgive Phil. That's the hardest thing to do, you know, whenever you've been hurt by somebody, offer that true forgiveness. But it's when we understand God's grace and forgiveness of us, then we can offer that to someone else.
Then we start to look at it as a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you had to go through that, so I didn't have to. I have to look at you and be able to see that road that you went down, the good, the bad, and how it came out on the other end to know that will work. Somebody has to be an example. Humans need that. The eyes eat first. And it's not I can tell you about it, but you ain't going to get it. You won't get it because you're going to hear me differently. But if I show you something, and those of you that have been designated to go through that hardship on the other end, you see the rewards that y'all have now for sticking it out, for sticking it out. It's still hard, but you stuck it out. And we watch y'all all the time. Living examples of how life really treats the true believer and the good people.
And to me, you know, it's like you look at somebody, actually someone posted the other day about their, he was saying how he went to AA and, you know, he had never like posted online. Like, that's heroic. Like to know that, like, you've been through this, like you overcame something that was hard, you know, you overcame something difficult because you wanted to be better for the people in your life. Like that's heroic. That's amazing. That's not something to be looked down on, you know.
It shows them it's possible. People need to see an example of it can be done. Because otherwise, we'll be like, hey, if I'm stuck in here, I can't get out. No one else has gotten out. Why? Especially if you're really weak. Like, well, if he couldn't get out, then I can't. Yeah. And like, hey, man, I saw somebody get out of this. So it's not a permanent thing. It's a road. There is an ending.
Yes. Sadie actually Phil. So we did a podcast where we talked about like behind the scenes of the movie. And Phil said to Sadie, he said, I'm embarrassed by this. He actually said that. And he said that throughout the thing. And Sadie was like, when you share something like this, like people, because Sadie said, I've known this for my own life. Because Sadie has shared vulnerable things about her life too. You know, she's like, every time I do, people aren't looking at me. They're thinking about themselves. Yeah. And that is really, it's true. It's like whenever you share something vulnerable, they're like, oh, I remember when I was in that place. Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember when I hit that.
Oh, it makes you look beautiful too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. You want to talk about getting beautiful in somebody's eyes, open up like that. Not just to them, just open up out loud to the masses.
Yep.
Because you know we're mean by nature. Like they'll throw daggers at you as soon as they smell blood in the damn water. But the more you do that and they see how tough you are, then it changes. It's a resilience. And then like, wait a minute. He's not somebody I can pick on. There's somebody I need to live an example by.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, you can just be honest and raw with your life. And it's just, there's a freedom that comes with that too, to say like, hey, yeah, this is who I was. And this is who I am now. This is who I was. This is what God did. And this is who I am now. And that's how Phil, you know, has lived his life. And we're excited. We can't wait for it to come out and just people to start seeing it, because just a few people that we've sent screeners to and all that, the impact and the feedback we've gotten has been just incredible about, you know, where they saw themselves or how they, you know, they feel like God is going to use this movie. So
that's awesome. So when is it coming out? What's the actual release date?
September 28th. And there's a website, theblindmovie.com, so you can go there and type in like your city and I'll tell you what theaters. Right now we're in like 1,600 theaters across the country. We hope to gain more. And so, you know, the more people kind of pre-order tickets and all that, it's kind of like any other, this is a independent film. We're in a Fathom release, so it's limited screens. So like we need more screens, you know, we need more people to buy tickets. Yeah. We need people to show up opening weekend. Because the more that happens, the more screens get picked up. We just heard that Taylor Swift, her, her concert is coming out 2 weeks after ours. So we're like, shoot, that's gonna knock all the movies out of the theater. She's gonna take over all the theaters. So we're like, we got to get people in the theater those first 2 weeks. So
yes, well, I hope people listen to this. This will come out before that, right,
Hunter? Yep.
It'll come out the day before.
Yep.
Awesome. So this is gonna come out on the 27th and. We encourage everyone to go to theblindmovie.com and pre-order your tickets and share it with everybody. Share gift tickets, do whatever to share this story because it can help people. It's not only just an entertainment thing. It can actually change a life.
And still track y'all down social media-wise, Instagram, Facebook, all the...
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yep. We're all there. And we've been talking about it on there a lot and everything too. It's fun. So this was set in like the 50s. So this is Phil and Kate's childhood. And you see some of the things that contributed to Phil's early years. His mom had mental illness, you know, may have contributed to his life and choices, but you see kind of a young Si. So Duck Dynasty fans will like to see a young Uncle Si, the beginning of his quirkiness, Phil and Kate dating, you know, those dating years. And it's fun because it really captures like our, like you mentioned, the actors are just the front of whatever this the movie, but the set design, the cinematography is beautiful. I mean, it's really is neat to see. You probably enjoy this too, Marcus, loving to be a part of a team, just how a team comes together and they work their tails off like till 2 and 3 in the morning. That's every amazing. Night. And to put something really beautiful on the screen, it takes.
Yeah. I've seen it firsthand on the set. Cause they're all there. They're all there. Yeah. They might not be doing anything. So I'd walk around like, hey, man, all these people, they're not doing anything. Hey, just wait till that sucker starts working, though. You ain't going to believe what he can do.
Yeah.
And then they would pass one thing off and hand it over to that other guy. I'd go to the next station. I'd be kind of hanging out with them. Like, hey, what are y'all doing here? And they'd start showing me just a little bit and how that magic comes together. And they splice and do it. And they'll be like, ah, you know. And then you see them start thinking, like, let's try this. What do you think about this? And stuff you don't even see. That's the best part about having other people around is their vantage point.
Yeah.
Imagine like you're all sitting around a ravine looking down at something and you want to see a different angle. That's a different human. Those are different eyeballs looking on that, and they explain it differently too. Mm-hmm. But you can hear it the same. It's a beautiful thing, man. And when those people in Hollywood are really good at that.
Yeah. And all the just little details. I mean, the attention to detail after detail that all makes up a piece or a set or a one scene that lasts like 30 seconds. But just all the little details that go into it. It really was an incredible thing to kind of experience.
We were talking about it too. It's like, and when you're watching a movie, you have the characters. That's one part of the movie. You also have the scenery. People can watch a movie just to see the scenery.
Yeah.
And the music. So if you're hitting them in the ears and the eyes, and then they got, it's these senses that just wrap up. And then what you're talking about, that's a movie.
It's so true. That's been fun to see how just little, like just different edits, but they put different music in and how that music
changes everything.
Affects that scene. And it's crazy.
I think it was your mom's Instagram this morning post, or maybe yesterday, posted that your grandson made a cameo in it.
Yes, that was so fun. So Willie was 2 when all this was happening. He was 3, right at 3, whenever Phil turned his life around and everything changed for their family. So he doesn't have a lot of memories of it. And we were like, oh, we need a 2-year-old little, actor, to play Willie. And we're like, we actually happen to have a grandson that's 2. Oh, so
we got one.
Yeah, John Shepherd got to play Willie in the movie. It was so cute. Oh, it was so fun to be on set with our little grandson playing Willie. It's just, that
was
pretty
surreal. Officially say he's been an actor his whole life.
That's right. Child actor.
Child,
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing this. And if we need to get together, it's been way too long.
Way too long. Way too long. Yeah, this was really fun to just get a little taste to visit with y'all. But yes, we need it in person.
Yes. Yes.
All right, girl. God bless you. Hug the family.
Yes. All right. Everyone.
Love y'all.
Thank you for coming out.
Bye. Love y'all.
Bye. Love you.
Thank you, Corey, for coming down. We appreciate you. And if you want to go check out this movie, please go do so. Go get your tickets right now. Also, if you have any guest recommendations, please just comment on YouTube. We want to see who you've got. So give us a shout. We'll take a look, and we'll see you next week.